Happy Chanukah, everybody. We are going to be discussing the topic of gambling away your life, also known as, is it mucher to play dreidel on Chanukah? So to that effect, we're going to be going through the sugya, and hopefully we'll all come out with something new on the topic. Okay, so yeah, I posted the source sheet in the chat. I'll also be sharing the screen for those who are who are not as big of fans of trying to split their screen themselves. I'll be doing it, not to worry. It'll hopefully be nice and big. If you can't see it still, let me know. I currently have one source per page, so I think it should be big enough for almost everybody. Okay, so here we go. So before we start, why the problem to actually, you know, play dreidel? What do we think? Why is it bad to play dreidel or gamble? Yes.
Gambling's not bad.
Okay. Let's just throw out some reason before the sources. So
you can't be a witness.
It'll make it okay. But I don't want to be a witness. Like I'm not being a witness anytime soon, anyways. So like, what's the difference? Right, like I understand if you want to be a witness, but let's say that's not your job. Your job is, I don't know, you're a lawyer, so what do you care? Right, you don't need to be a witness, you're the lawyer. Lawyers don't need to have the same degree of like being cross-examined. They just got to ask the fun questions themselves, so who cares? Right, so you're right, maybe good to be a witness. But what else? What would be a problem, any other problem you have with gambling?
You can't sign an exuba.
That's part of the you can't be a witness problem. So, is there any other issues why we think you should be able to play dreidel?
Rabbi Metzger, I don't know about other people, but you're very, very unstable.
Oh, okay.
So anyone
else can
that? Like the I hear
everything. Aren't we told to earn our living by the sweat of our brow?
Right. We're supposed to make money by the sweat of our brow. The problem being is that if you do it by gambling, right, it's not your sweat, it's your brow. If you're stealing it off of somebody else's sweat. Right? You deserve that.
Sometimes at the craft tables, you can really sweat your brows.
I'm not saying that it's not stressful. The question is whether or not you know, it's considered a good day's work. So, okay, good. So now let's break into the sugya, and then we'll see. Hopefully that'll make things a little more clear. Okay. And at any point, if anything's unclear, please shout out. Okay. I see Danny Rosenberg said that it's stealing. Very good. Okay. So I think we got most of the reasons that we're going to come up. So we're doing really great right now.
Is dreidel usher? Is it usher to play dreidel? That's his topic.
Yep. Okay. So now let's continue, and we're going to go to. We're going to start going through the sources now. Okay. So the first source, right, as was noted correctly by Mark, right, is based on the question of testimony. Who is good for testimony, and who is not? So who would like? So since you guessed right, Mark is going to read for us the first source in English. Okay, this is the Mishnah Sanhedrin, and it is dealing with different types of witnesses that are no good.
Invalid, jurors, student flyers, and sellers of sabbatical goods. Rabbi Shimon says previously they were called gatherers of sabbatical goods, but because of tax collectors, they became known as sellers of sabbatical goods. Rabbi Yehuda says, When are these invalid? When they have no other trade, but when they have another trade, they are acceptable.
Okay, so as it seems right now, do we know why they're no good based on the Mishnah?
Why?
Like, does it say what's wrong with, let's say, being a gambler or being a usurer? Do we know why explicitly from the Mishnah?
No.
Not really.
It might be implicit that they're not trustworthy.
Right. Some of them are not trustworthy, But as far as exactly why they're not trustworthy, they're no good. It's not so clear.
Correct.
So luckily, we have the Gemara, which is going to make things make hopefully a lot more sense. Okay. So the Gemara. So we're going to focus on the first case, that of the dice player, right? The Masachak Bakuvia. Okay. Okay. So again, so this is the Gemara immediately following the Mishnah. Okay. Okay, I believe Danny had said that it was a question relating to stealing, but I believe Danny, does your audio work? I think his I don't think Danny's audio works. So I guess we'll have to have another. Who here likes hard to pronounce words?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you, Moshe. Okay. So you're going to be right. you're going to try and properly pronounce this Mahta. Okay.
Mahta.
That's the hard word. Okay. But the rest of it should be straightforward. Again, we'll go with the English, and I'll highlight the Hebrew word when I think the Hebrew word is helpful.
Misafa Bekubia Maika Avid. So what's wrong with it?
We'll start with the English. Let's go with the English.
The English.
Yeah.
What wrong does the dice player do? Rabbi Bar Chama said he is disqualified because it is gambling. It is an asmachta, and an asmachta is not legally binding. Rabbi Sheshe said such cases do not come under the category of asmachta, but the reason is that they, specifically dice players, are not concerned with the general welfare. Wherein do they differ if he, the gambler, acquired another trade?
Okay.
Translation.
So what reasons do we have now?
Did you see the snow?
What are the potential things we have wrong now based on the Gemara? Right? What's wrong with it being a gambler?
They don't care about the general community.
Right, welfare. They don't care about anybody else. Right, all they do is they try and suck money out of people all day long, and that's bad. Right, so that would imply what's wrong? Right, that was Roshesh's opinion. What's the issue there? Right, it's that you don't have is that you're not doing anything productive. You're not sweating for your labor. Instead, you're taking somebody else's stuff. Right, you should have had a better job.
They're taking advantage of people.
Right, taking advantage of people. Right, but is it? What's the difference between that and the first opinion of Rami Bar Chama? Right. Let's look at Rashi and help explain what the problem is on a smart. Right. One of them is you're not being productive for society. Right. Oseg b'yeshuvo shel olam. Right. Working on the betterment of the world, or it's settling the world. So, right, that's the problem. So now, as far as what exactly these are, we're gonna look at Rashi. Hopefully, he'll help us out. Okay. So here we go. So now Rashi is gonna help explain what the Gemara is talking about, in case some of us were not quite sure. So he starts talking about based on the some of his points from the mission that are helpful. Again, that this is all about talking about giving a testimony, and then when it says that when it talks about what's a dice player, as we get to in the Gemara, Rashi's on the mission gives us a little hint that all of these are thieves. The Torah says don't have wicked witnesses, even more so judges. So the problem is that you're doing something wrong. Like you're essentially a thief. If you're right, so that's the problem. Is that you're doing some sort of thievery, as will happen with all the cases we had in Mishnah, something to do with being a thief. Okay, so then the question, and why does it matter if that's your only profession, right? Has that profession except for that one, since he doesn't busy himself with developing the world. He isn't familiar with the laws and how to do business and isn't afraid of sinning. So what's the issue if he's, so what's the issue then of there's an additional thing, a reason, not just the fact that you're not being productive, but that you are more readily willing to do something wrong now, right? You not only aren't you helping, being helpful, but you're doing something that's even worse than being not helpful, right? There's one thing if you spent all day, you know, do it like, you know, like, let's say you spent all day meditating. You did absolutely nothing, right? So that would be one thing. But here, this is even less than nothing, right? It's like negative to society. Okay, being gambling is, you know, pretty bad based on this.
Rabbi, is that the player or the dealer that's in the bad, or is it both?
Perhaps everybody somebody who's professionally involved with this, either side, it appears. Anybody who's involved in dice playing. Right? If you spend all day doing dice playing, it means that you're doing something wrong. So we'll get into more details in a little bit. So the first thing let's look at is what the first thing that Gemara said is it's an issue of asmachta. Right? What's the problem with asmachta?
It's just a reliance. It's not it's when you rely on something as a secondary proof. Is that
right? So you didn't fully acquire your winnings, right? Even if you won by gambling, you didn't really win. You really hustled the guy, or you stole from him somehow. There's no way you actually outright won. This is how gambling works. Never really got it. Why? Why is it considered to be? And then Rashi continues, right? Asmachta, something he didn't commit to, or other relies on it isn't true. He thinks he'll win, and sometimes they beat him, and therefore he does not acquire it. Why doesn't he acquire it? Right? It doesn't acquire it, meaning it's basically theft. It's not truly theft, but it's basically theft. So, like, there is a difference, which will hopefully help us a little bit later. So, then the question is, what do we mean by asmachta? Right? So, then Rashi gives a couple of cases here. Okay? We'll start with the reasons and we'll ignore the cases. Hopefully that'll be okay. Because we'll get back to these cases again later. So for now, let's just start with the reasoning, right? Why is it called an asmachta? For example, if in a situation in which the man is obligating himself has reason to believe that he will not actually have to pay. Right? So there's something wrong with the person's thought process. They don't really fully commit when they're doing so. Right? So for instance, the question of whether or not, you know, if somebody says the case of a Metzia is that somebody needs a contract for your field and it says, oh, if you don't do by a certain date, you'll have to pay a fine. So you can't really be expected to pay the fine. Enforcing that last fine is not necessarily as easy to enforce because most people fully intend to pay earlier. So therefore, enforcement of that fine is more difficult because it's considered to be on a smata. The person didn't really mean to agree to it when they signed it because they didn't really think they were going to have to pay that extra money. Okay, right, then there's another case after that. So we'll skip down to, okay. And now we're getting to the gambling. Okay, a wager though, right? What's the difference between the different types of gambling, right? So there's one, which is where you don't necessarily give up on it, but a true wager is not considered to be an asmachta. Why not? Because each player realizes that as skilled as he may be at the game, the outcome is nonetheless governed by chance. Therefore, he is resigned to pay if he loses, and the winner is thus not guilty of stealing. Okay, so this last bit had a lot of things in the sense that we'll have to pick apart. Okay, so when you actually gamble, the question is, have you fully gone through with everything? right? Do we say that it's fully to chance and therefore it's okay? Or if we, or if you were, if you don't fully commit, now it's stealing. So that's this is asmata. It's almost stealing, but it's not necessarily stealing. It kind of depends on who you take your money from when you win the game, right? Was the person, you know, fully committed or not? And that's a hard thing to tell. So odds are you probably stole from like a whole bunch of people if you're a professional gambler.
So are you saying that a slot machine is better than poker?
Is yes. Based on this, 100% better, right? Because poker, you never really do ever fully give it. No, until like until the last second, you're like, nah, they can turn my card. It's possible, but when you, but as opposed to when you like when you put the money and then, right, a pure chance. Let's say you're just simply, and there's no way that you can improve upon. It's like you get, let's say the classic, the dumbest game of dice. You roll for higher score, right? There's no way to cheat. This comes down to there's no strategy involved. It's just rolling the dice, right? So in that case, it would be okay.
Should be a better
game. As opposed to in a case, let's say, if you have there is some strategy or skill involved.
But there's a little bit of skill involved in crap, though.
So. Right. So that would be a problem, according to this reason. So as it stands right now, seemingly we are all unable to gamble.
But it's almost counterintuitive. It's almost counterintuitive. You think the thing with more skill would be better, not worse.
Right. So that's the issue with asmachta. Is that it's you're basically stealing. Right. So the question is, which one is, when is it cross the boundary between stealing and not stealing? And that is hard to tell because it's a fine line. So let's. Here we go. All right. So let's scroll back up to the bar. Okay. So there's two. We had two sets of reasons. One reason is because of the asmata and some sort of stealing going on. Right. That's the first reason we had. Right. We just explained asmata. Right. That's one line of reasoning. That's Rami Bar Chama. It's based on. The problem is if you're stealing from somebody, which would mean that let's say if you're playing a game that's purely chance and you fully committed to it, then it's possible for it to be allowed again. That would be okay, but what was the second opinion?
Because I'm hearing you.
Okay. The opinion is that of Rav Sheshet, right? Rav Sheshet's opinion is that the issue is that they're not osik yeshuvo shel olam, right? They're not positively contributing to society and the world. And that's the problem. And what's the nafka mina, right? What's the test case? Somebody who gambles part-time, right? The guy who, you know, goes gambling on weekends but has a full-time job. So on the one hand, he's definitely working, helping the world, right? You know, the guy's... He's a lawyer, he's a doctor, he's an accountant, he's a teacher, he's insert job here during the week, right? Pick your favorite Jewish job, right? That's what he's doing during the week. Oh, Zeke Shuva Shalom, right? Shkoyach. So that works according to Rav Sheshet. But according to Rami Bar Chama, what's the problem? You're stealing. So I don't care if you steal part-time or if you steal full-time, you're stealing money from people. And that's a problem, and therefore you're never going to be a good witness. All right? So depending on which one it is, that'll be the question. So it's also worthy of noting that what does this whole discussion seemingly center around?
Trustworthiness.
Trustworthiness, which means it's only relevant for?
Yes.
Right? Testimony. Very good. Right, that's what it would seem like. But that's not how everybody's going to be taking it. Okay? So as far as can we generalize it to other places? So let's see where we go. Because now we're gonna jump. We're jumping forward in history, right? Rambam, 12th century, and the 13th century in Egypt. Okay? So now let's look at the way that he redefines the what's problematic about these people. Okay? We would volunteer for anybody here ever see Wicked on Broadway?
It's on my bucket list.
I saw it in Toronto.
That counts. I meant like saw it actually put on. Okay, good. So Mark, you want to take it?
Sorry, which one? This one? There are
other wicked persons.
There are other wicked persons who are not acceptable as witnesses, even though they are required to make financial restitution and are not by. I can't. It's covered. I can't see the word.
Is that better?
Covered by not punished by lashes. Since they take money that does not belong to them lawlessly, they are unacceptable, as Devarim 19:16 says, when a lawless person rises up against a person. Similarly, dice players are disqualified if this is their only occupation. Since such a person does not involve himself in ordinary business pursuits, it can be assumed that his livelihood is dependent on his gambling, which is forbidden as the shade of robbery. The above applies not only to dice players, but also to all those who gamble with the shells of nuts or the shells of pomegranates. Similarly, our sages did not disqualify only those who train doves, but also those who gamble with other animals, beasts and fowl, saying the owner of the one that will outrace the other or vanquish the other will acquire the stakes put up by both. Similarly, other analogous types of gamblers are disqualified, provided they do not derive their livelihood from a source other than gambling. All of the above are disqualified according to rabbinic decree.
Okay, so the Rambam is, right, so when is it a problem? Right, is it a problem that I gamble once in a while or more than that? What makes it a problem? Elena, he said something, you were muted. I couldn't hear you.
Sorry, if most of your livelihood is from gambling, if you're gambling, you know, to support yourself.
Right. Professional gamblers is the problem. But if you're anything else, it should be fine. The issue is that that's all you are. Right? So right. If you have a job on the side, that wouldn't necessarily be a problem. Okay, so that's according to the Rambam. Now we have the Radvaz, who explains further explaining the Rambam. So he says, right. So what's the problem? Is that right? So there is an assumption that he subsists off of gambling, which is theft. And follows the opinion that is an issue of a smachta, and the problem is theft. Right? So the problem is when you live off of thievery and you always are stealing, that's the problem. Like once you're a thief, we can't trust you at all, and therefore you're wicked, and that's the problem, is that you're a thief.Ah? But you only really get the name of a thief if that's all you do. If you, let's say, you did it once or twice, that's not really such a problem. But on the other hand, we have a tshuva of the Rivash. Okay, so he lived in the, so he lived a couple centuries later than the Rambam. So he gives a different reason. So who is the one who thinks that who really doesn't like gambling? Anybody here really anti-gambling?
Not in this corner.
Okay. No, nobody. Okay, fine. I'll play the bad guy. What? I'll play the bad guy who doesn't like gambling. Mark, you don't like gambling either?
I don't despise it. I dislike it. I don't despise it.
Dislike it. Okay, disliking it's good enough. Okay, so we'll tap you again. Okay.
Even according to Rav Sheshet, since he believes that there is no asmachta by gambling. In any event, it is a disgusting, abominable, and repulsive. It has felled many victims, and mighty are those it has killed.
Okay, so according to the Rivash, Are you allowed to gamble? What it look like? Yes or no? I'm seeing a bunch of shaking your heads. Correct. It's a definite, very hard no. Not only is it no, it's like this is going to lead to terrible things. Right? So it sounds like in the town of the Rivage, right, in Spain, they seem to have a gambling problem. Right? So actually the Rivage, actually think that the century is off there, should be 15th into the 16th. So basically he'd started out in Spain and then moved to Svat. So he's saying that gambling is really dangerous, and he knows of it. So, and it sounds like he has personal testimony of many people he knows who gambled, and then it led to, you know, them costing them their lives. Whether it means literally or figuratively, I don't know, but definitely it is not looking very good. Okay, so that's the Rivash. So on the one hand, we have the Rambam, who says the only problem is whether or not you're stealing. And that's the problem. And if you have a job, it's okay. On the other hand, we had the Rivash, who said all gambling is terrible, disgusting, abominable, and repulsive, and it kills people. Okay, whether it means literally or figuratively, either way, it's still not looking good. So what do we do at the end of the day? Okay, so to this, we're going to jump to the Shulchan Aruch. And we'll see what the Shulchan Aruch has to say on the topic. Okay, we're going to get to the right. We're going to head to the Halacha Maaseh. So right. So let's look at his paragraph here. Right. So he's doing this based off. It looks very similar in language to the Rambam, but there's certain things that he leaves off from the Rambam and from the Mishnah and the literature we've quoted so far that would make it clear what his opinion is. Okay. Anybody here Sephardi by any chance, or any of the Dot Mizrach? No. All Ashkenazim. Oh man, so boring.
Well, not in Israel.
Grandma, would you like to read? Grandma, can you see? You'll have to unmute yourself. Grandma, you know how to do that? I guess not. Okay. We'll do the shot. Okay. So I guess okay, so Moshe, I know you're not the biggest fan of his conclusion, but you're gonna have to read it anyways.
Fine. So what qualifies as dice playing? Those that play with wood, pebbles, or bones and make a condition with each other that whomever defeats the other in that game will take such and such an amount. In other words, 7 to 6 odds. Similarly, if one plays with domesticated or undomesticated animals or birds and makes a condition that whichever animal defeats or outruns the others will take such and such an amount from the other or anything similar, it would all be prohibited and would be rabbinical robbery.
Okay, so according to the Shulchan Aruch, right, or Yosef Cairo, right? So, the Beit Yosef, is there any, so are you allowed to gamble in any way, shape, or form? Even in the, oh, it's just chance. Or anything else we mentioned before?
Never allowed.
Right, never allowed, right? So for all those who like playing Grail, I guess you look like you're in hot water right now. Okay. So then we get into the case of what if you're playing with a non-Jew, right? And then he says, well, for one question is the question of, you know, how stealing works with the non-Jew, when that whole, which we'll leave that part aside. Even if you want to claim that there's no issue of stealing from a non-Jew because, you know, it insert your, you know, reason why that's okay. We're not going to deal with that subject now because that's it. Yeah. Okay. So what's the, why is it, why, there's, it gets worse. Keep going. From here, there is. Can you read that?
Oh, there is. Okay, there is, however, prohibition of participating in the idle matters that a person should not participate in his entire life. Rather, he should involve himself with matters of wisdom and advancing of the world. This opinion disgraces with the earlier one. With Sand says that one is not disqualified unless he has no other trait. If he has another trait, however,
Wait, hold on a second. That's the Ramal already. When he gets to the italics. So until the first part, he's like, okay, right? There's a problem with doing so. Definitely a problem, right? Even with a non-Jew, because this is an unproductive activity and you're not helping the world. It's bad. But there is an opinion that says, like, you know, the only problem is this opinion disagrees with the one earlier that says that that only be that's your only job. But what's the last thing that the Beit Yosef is quoting here? That it's a problem because you're violent, even if, let's say, you know, you got around the stealing issue, there's still a prohibition of being involved in gambling and doing that for your livelihood. And that's a problem. Even if it's not full time, if you have another job, it's still a problem, according to this opinion. So according to that, right, so again, so quite clearly, the Shulchan Aruch says that you cannot gamble. For all those who are eagerly hoping that they can, we have the Ramah, okay? The Ashkenazi Posek, who's going to help us get our fix. So here we go.
If he has another trade, however, even if he plays with a Jew, he would not be disqualified. This custom is already spread in accordance with the latter opinion due to dice play, and the only one disqualified is someone who has no other trade. If someone plays on trust, whether he is required to pay is discussed in Simon Reish Zion, translation wiki source.
All right, which is the next source, right? So the Rama says, actually, there is a way that it could be allowed, assuming that it's not. The only problem is that if you're a professional gambler, right? So if you know, so being a professional gambler, seemingly there is no way to solve that, right? If you're a professional gambler, that's it. Like, there's no way to help you, right? But if you do it part-time or do it on, if you do it, you know, once in a while for, you know, for fun, there seems to be a way that it could be okay. So let's try and see what that is. Right, he mentions that you have to somehow get around, we're getting around the issue of stealing somehow. The question is, how do we do that? To that, we have, so this one's gonna get a little bit complicated. So, just to explain, so we have to figure out how we can not be stealing. We mentioned before, there's an issue of asmachta, right? Issues being with the person, you know, you have to have a fully committed and be sure that the person is going to get the money, and so that he's fully giving it to you willingly, wholeheartedly. So there's no stealing involved whatsoever, right? The problem is that seemingly that's impossible according to the Gemara and according to Rashi. Doesn't seem to say that, like, unless it's like right? Rashi says maybe absolute pure chance we could allow, but the Gemara didn't seem to say anything about that. It seems that there's always a problem of asmata, according to that opinion, and therefore you'd always be stuck. And that's also similarly what the Rambam said, that there's always a problem of some degree of stealing involves gambling. So, right, so that's going to be a problem. Okay, so now you'll notice this is kind of long. Okay, so we're going to try and go through it. If at some point it gets confusing, because it's a little technical as far as the transactionary side, there's a summary of one line at the end. Okay, so we only have, you know, like, what do we have, many sources we have left? We have like two sources left. So after this one, might take us, you know, the longest time, but hopefully it'll be clear. Okay, so now the question, now we started out talking about asmachta in general. Let's say, can we make an assumed, an implicit part of a contract based on some future event that's not definitively A leads to B? Right, but something that is conditional on somebody's actions in the future that may end up affecting the contract. Are you allowed to do that or not? So the Shulchan Aruch, which is the part again that's not italicized. That's the first part here. So instead, it's a problem if you do conditionally, if this occurs or does not occur, and if you haven't fully committed, that's going to be a problem, right? If this occurs, if this does not occur, has not made up his mind to the transfer of possession, since in his mind he relied on the fact that the matter may occur or may not occur. Right? So if you in your contract or betting on something that is not fully determined and isn't clear, and like this event that may or may not have not happened, it's a problem in your contract. It's a problematic contract, and therefore it's not going to be enforced. That type of condition is open. Right? It has to be, if you do this, you know, if you do A, then B will happen. If you do C, then D will happen. Right? There can't be any room for maybe this, maybe that. It has to be a if this, then that, or if, right, in a direct sequence is how the contract has to be worded and written. Can't be something that, that a, an outside party could change the way that would happen. Right? If you did this, this would happen. If it was, but if this, then that. If you're not clear about the progression of events, that leads to problems. So now we're going to get into three distinctions in the laws of asmata. This is the Rama. Okay, so this discussion originally was quoted in Tosfot on our sugya about asmata. I brought it in the Rama because it's a little clearer and easier to follow when it's quoted by the Rama than when it's quoted by Tosfot. So hopefully this will be understandable. If it's not, that again, please stop me at any point. I'm going to read this one because it's a little complicated. Again, just let me know if anything's unclear, and I'm happy to repeat myself because this is the crux of if you want to gamble, this is very important to know in order that way you can gamble properly. Okay? So any situation where it is not in the party's power to do and is dependent on others, such as where he says, acquire wine from such and such place. If you do not acquire it, you will owe me such and such amount, which is not in the party's power because they may not want to sell to him. It would be an asmata in all respects, and no kinyan would be affected. Right? So if you say, go buy me, right? You ask them to buy you a bottle of wine. And if you don't manage to pull it through, you're gonna have to pay me X amount of money instead. So, right, so that's not a valid term of the contract because the guy's gonna do his best. And it's not up to him if he can buy it or not. Right? That for all you know, the seller will be sold out, or will say, I'm not going to sell to you, I hate you. And then, right, it's not based on your ability to go to the market and buy it. It's based on whether or not the other person will give it to you or not. And that's a problem because that's, right, the person, when the person accepted, oh, can you go buy a bottle of wine for me? They had no intention at any point of accepting this fine. So therefore, the fine will not be enforceable. Okay, that's case number one. Right, so you need to be the person who's accepting the condition needs to be fully aware of it. Stipulation two. In any situation where the party can perform the act or did not exaggerate, such as where he said, if I leave the barren field and do not work, I will pay the rest of my property, it would not be in a smakla and a king would be affected. Right? So if he says, you know, if I do it wrong, again, like he gives a reasonable condition, then that's fine. But if there's another issue about smiles, if you exaggerate it, if he did exaggerate it, like I said, if I don't work the field, I will pay 1,000 sous. We'll be in a smile, then okay, it will be accepted. Thus, whereas seller transfers to the buyer on the condition that if he does such and such, he will acquire, and it's on a smile, so because the fulfillment of the condition does not depend on the seller, but the buyer. Again, the issue being that it's not a fully serious sale. There's something wrong with the intent at the time of the sale. And three, this is more, right? If it was not in the party or anyone else's powers, which is the case of dice playing or something similar, where one does not know whether he will be successful or not, and he's still made the condition, he has certainly made up his mind to transfer out of doubt. When is this true, right? So there's another case of where, like, let's say it's completely out of everybody's hands, right? It's all up to chance entirely, and therefore you've committed for that sense. But the question, the problem is that what are you relying on? Chance. So how do you solve the issue of chance? Because you never give up with it. You're always like, oh, I'll roll my number, right? Maybe I'll get the card I need in poker. There's always that check possibility, right? So when would you be allowed to do so? There's a way to do so if you're using cash, right? If you place cash now, if you use cash, right? So that's you've fully given up on it. But if they're playing on credit, it would not be a valid transaction because the person never really gives up. They're always like, nah, I'll win it back. And that's a problem. Okay, so this gives us one of the conditions that we're going to need if we want, so we need to make sure that the person's intent's fully there, and we have to be using cash. Okay, right, it can't be on credit, it has to be cash, right? All the money is there to be used. Okay. Okay, then there's a case of, right? So you're saying that, let's say you want to go to the casino, right? And I'll trade money, right? I'll give them something, and then they'll give me chips in exchange for that, right? Let's say I'm gonna give them my watch, and instead they'll give me chips for my watch, with the watch being the collateral. That would not help because there's no money here, so that's no good, right? It has to be done with cash specifically. It's the only way the person is fully committing. Okay, so there's another condition that you would need. Okay, right, so then we have the Mordechai, who has another condition, right? One is, it needs to be with cash. Okay, we have cash. Not up to, right, completely out of your hands. And then the Mordechai, right, so with cash, completely up to chance, so you have no skill and can't affect the decision, and therefore you have to have full intent to give up on it. And then we have the Mordechai who adds, you have to place it on the table. Take cash, put it on the table. So whether or not chips work or not as representative of cash is a separate, let's say they count as cash, right? You exchange this directly for this money, right? This is worth $10 at this point. You just use it because it's more fun to play with, right? So that, let's consider that as if it's cash. Right, then that if you consider it cash, then assuming you put all the money down on the table, that could be okay if you're using cash.
Rabbi, so in the accounting world, we have a term called cash equivalent. Is that which is what I believe poker chips would fall under? Would that be considered what he would have to put down?
That could be sufficient. Yes, the liquid cat, or that could be considered, right? If it's considered cash equivalent and treated as such by law, that'd be sufficient also. Similarly, let's say but it'd have to be something that's like readily exchangeable and usable as cash, right?
Yeah. I know that, like, if you go into a casino, you could still use poker chips to tip the guy carrying your luggage or something.
Right, so that means that it's used as cash, which means that since therefore that would be fine. It would just be a currency of that location, so that would be okay.
But it's localized to the casino, though.
If it's still considered and treated like a valid currency, it's currency. Technically, all currency nowadays is falls into that category because it's not really backed by anything physical and solvent, technically. But that's an economy question that we're not going to get into the economics of that. That's just, yeah, we could another time. That would be its own sheer in of itself. How are you allowed to use money that's not actually money? How can you use modern money, and how's that allowed? It's a fun question, but again, not what we're talking about. We're talking about gambling here. Okay, so we have that. Also, so now we have, you just get to have full intent. Oh, let's put back to the full screen so that way it's nice and big. Okay, right. So now we need to have full intent, complete full intent. In order to achieve this complete full intent and to not be in a smata, so you're not stealing anymore, what do you need to do? You need to be using cash. You need to place it on the table. It needs to be a game of pure chance. And we've been, right? So there's an aside in the middle here that not only does this agree and hold that you can never play ever. That's also an opinion, right? The commentary of the Mordechai says that, well, if you say it's usher to gamble, it's usher to gamble. No matter how, these things aren't going to help you, right? So we'll get back to that opinion later. Okay, so then also, not only do you put it on the table, but the table has to be a place, right? There are those who say the only permitted with a table, where the money is owned by both parties. Okay, so now we need, not only does the table need the money on the table has to be a common space that everybody has a right to, like a right to that area, right? So you put your money in the middle of the table, and whoever puts their money, that would be okay. Okay. Here, so I guess we'll, okay. So the next part. No, yeah, that's more about inheritance. Okay, so then another, so summarize, so summary at the end, right? According to the Re, you need money on the table. Please, right, according to the Re and the Mordechai, you need, the money has to be on the table, and the place where this is, as the place where everybody owns it jointly. Oops, sorry about that again. And it's a game that neither party thinks that he can win, and therefore they all truly give up all their full rights to the money, right? So in order, so based on these criteria, what type of gambling is allowed? Right, we're left with games of chance, where you're unable to affect the end result. Because if there's always a chance of you affecting the end result, say poker would be particularly problematic because poker is a game that has a lot of skill, not just luck to it. And therefore, there's a problem of, right, basically depends on how much skill is involved in the game. Right, if it's a game with next to no skill, right, it would be, there is room to allow it. But if not, then it's much more problematic to have to allow. And there, you could still allow, let's say, the Rambam assumes again that yes, it might be slightly stealing. Yeah, you try to figure out a way to have it not be stealing, which is kind of hard, right? You need to have everybody agreed upon fully, you know, committing to the transfer of the money, which is a little bit hard to do properly. Okay, so right now, if the opinion that say you're allowed to gamble in halacha means you have to have managed to. All parties involved have to be fully committed to giving up their money and need to have done a physical placement of the money, which is cash money, meaning, right, not just, you know, like, oh, I say I'll pay you. No, you got to put the money down or it's not going to work. And it has to be a case where you fully give up on it. Guys, this clear? Right, so as far as the degree of skill involved, and whether you've ever not, that's a question, but the point is you have to fully have given up on the money in order for it to work. Right? So we'll leave you say that for a second. So let's say the case of you wanted to, let's say, run a community gambling or poker night. Right? So you need to have everybody commit in the beginning that all the money that I bring in, like you pay at the door, It's all sunk, right? Because if you don't agree fully and explicitly and say that I'm giving up on all of my money that I'm paying in now, there's going to be a problem. This is why normally a lot of times when they run these type of events, if the bias ever ran in one of these and the conditions they use, just let me know if it doesn't work. But normally you would not be playing then to get your money actually back. You play just so you get the most point total at the end. And then there'll be a prize corresponding to that. So that way it's not fully, truly gambling, right? It's more like you're playing a game for prizes. And all any of the money that's changing hands was fully committed to be given, right? Important point being that you fully committed when you placed down the money that you no longer have rights to it. So we'll get to that, and we'll get to that at the end. Okay, when we get to, okay. Okay, we're running short on time. Okay, so now, right, so this is, again, so you have to make sure you're fully committed to give the money up. So now it's the case of dreidel. What do we think? When you're on, the way you're going to play dreidel, right, you know, everybody's got their, again, four-sided cube. Is there any skill involved in dreidel playing? What do we think?
Depends if you load it.
Okay, short of outright cheating, no, right? Right, short of using that would be a problem. Yes, using a loaded dreidel is definitely going to be it would be a problem. But short of that, you're giving a chance. Therefore, right, and not only that, where do you keep the money?
In the middle.
In the middle. Right, you're gambling with the money in the middle. So as far as That goes. Have we fulfilled all the conditions? Money's on the table. Not only do you have the actual money you're gambling on the table, but you place the money in place that everybody's rights to. Does anybody really think that he's a better chance of winning than anybody else in Dreidel? No, because like everybody spins and it's just like literally based on where it falls. Like there's nothing you can do. Right? So according to Ashkenazim, are we allowed to play Dreidel?
Yes.
But what if you're not? What if you happen to be Sfaradi? So that we have the Revagio safe. So we were mentioned before about the revise about the dangers of gambling.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's the Revagio safe ads on that. Also regarding the lottery, right? Because this is particularly the question that's are you allowed to participate in the lottery in Israel? Right? Only governments are allowed to run proper lotteries because basically it's viewed as too good of a scheme. The question is, are you halakhically allowed to participate in this or not? So he says, so in addition to gambling being a terrible, disgusting thing, we quoted the Rebush just before, he says, there are people who buy lots of tickets, spending almost their entire salary, thinking that one number may win, and in the end, they lose all their money and property. So Rebush said before about it being a problem, an abominable practice, and it has failed many great people. So you say, oh, lottery's not so bad. It's like the lightest form of gambling. Everybody is saying he knows the people who blew their entire salary on lotto tickets. So then if you fast forward again, he goes through all the stories I quoted and more. And what's his conclusion?
Play roulette.
Who'd like to read the conclusion? Right here.
The conclusion of the law for Sfaradim and Edotas Mizrach, it is forbidden to buy lottery tickets, even more so the various gambling tickets for sports play on Shabbat and violate Shabbat publicly. You're helping people violate sins. Even for Ashkenazim, there are those who prohibit it.
Okay, so Rav Yosef, is he in the you should gamble category or the you should never gamble category? What would you say?
Should never gamble category.
Never gamble, never do lotto, right? Bad. Okay? So, and now as far as the who else subscribes to this general principle of being a bad idea, right? So this is from Gray Matter by Rabbi Chaim Jachter, a Rebbe of mine from JBC. So, right? So this was written, I think, about 20 years ago or so. Right? So he's giving some other pitch. So as far as the can you do charity, so just an aside, as opposed to revising if you can't do raffles. So right, so Rav Aaron Lichtenstein said that you actually can, as well as others, because when you do a charity raffle, you actually are fully committing to give up all the money to give to the charity, and you're just like you don't really expect to win. Right? As opposed to the lotto, which is based on the way that they actually advertise and do it in general. Right, we're differentiating the lottery versus a random raffle. Right, the random raffle, like you probably give the money anyways, for the fundraiser. You're just right. So therefore, the Rav Aaron would permit you to do, and many others do permit doing a lottery type, using a lottery in terms of for fundraising. But on the other hand, here's a list of some people who are very much against it for other reasons. Okay, mommy, would you like to read the warning?
Where does it start? Rabbi Jachter?
Yes.
The author, Rabbi Chaim Jachter, once asked Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik if it's permissible to go to a casino for a single visit. The Rav replied succinctly, "It's a bad habit. Don't do it." Rav Mordechai Willick encouraged the author to publicize the Rav's statement. Similar sentiments are expressed by the Mishnah Berurah 670 Bir Halacha SV
You don't need to read
the Noah game.
Don't worry.
Okay, sorry. The Aruch HaShulchan, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Ibra Moshe, Rav Yehuda Amital, in discussion with the author, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, a lot of people in discussion with this author, Rav Herschel Schachter, in a lecture delivered at Yeshiva, and Rav Mordechai Willig. Okay, so a lot of people, Chaim.
Yes, a lot of people, right?
We will explore the basis for this attitude in the Gemara Rishonim and Shulchan Aruch.
Right, notice if you need, so if you want to see more, I got links here. Right, so you got to send the story sheet there if you want to download for release it later. You can find it on Safari. The books is there. Right, if you search gambling on Safari, it's like the first thing you get. So, okay, so, right, so this, so, right, so now there's two sides to the, there's two issues that we can deal with, right, in terms of are you allowed to gamble or not. One side of things, we have the, right, there's a technical issue of dealing with the, how do I not steal? And there's also the issue of, even if I'm not stealing, how could it be, there's also the question of gambling being a dangerous activity, right? It's a bad habit to get into, so don't do it, right? And as seen by, as quoted by the Rivash, as well as Rav Avadia Yosef, as I'm sure many people here may know cases where gambling has ruined people. Right, even people who you know, like seemingly had other jobs and had full. All right, it has ruined many people. Even those seemingly were rich and should have known better. Gambling is dangerous. So the question that comes down to: so can you ever gamble? And if so, how can you do it? So this question came up when I was learning in the Morasha Beit Midrash program. About 9 years ago. So we were learning the Sanhedrin, and we were seeing what we should do for our off day. So then we decided, so we had to spend, right? So we're like, oh, there's a nearby racetrack. Can we go? So we went through this whole sugya, right? And the issue is that also in Camp Morasha, there also happens to, who happens to be in Camp Morasha? Rav Mordechai Willig. Quota no, here yeah. being very strongly against. So we were trying to figure out how could we go without leading it to be a dangerous addictive activity. So the way what we did is we all in advance had to commit to how much money we would basically normally, let's say if you're going to go watch a TV show, like you're going to go watch a show, you want to go watch a movie, it'll be $15-$20. Right? So you had to decide how much money you're going to lose. Right before the day started, we had to decide we're gonna decide how much money you're losing. I think I went with $10, and I think I actually made money on it. But basically, most people lost all their money; they got nothing. Right. So again, so we all picked random racehorses, and that was it. But the point being that in order to do so, we had to make sure again this is at the racetrack. There's absolutely no skill whatsoever involved. We had to place the money down in advance. Right, according to all the stipulations of the read, and to make sure to satisfy the worry of is it become an addictive activity. So we made sure that we're purely doing it as basically, of course, there's no like a gate fee to go watch a sporting event. So instead, the gate fee is you have to place a bet of $10, right? And that's all it was. So you could argue whether or not that solution is a good idea or not. You could very much argue that it's still it's a dangerous thing. You shouldn't even set foot in a racetrack, and you'd probably be right. But that was what we did. Okay, so fine. And so again, so back to our case of dreidel, right? So can you play dreidel? So since dreidel is, as you know, again, it's basically a child's game done with all of the trappings of a child's game, and typically it's money that was planning to be given to the children anyways. So for Ashkenazim, right, it would be permitted because it's not one of those games that you expect that's addictive and habit forming, and nobody's going to become a professional dreidel player. Mm-hmm. If you've heard of a kid who has that dream, please let me know. And now it is usher for him to ever play dreidel ever again. Also, beware of him having other addictive tendencies in general. Just saying. But on the other hand, we have the Sfaradim, right? right, championed by Rav Avi Yosef, saying that you should never gamble because it's a super bad practice, as well as all these other Rabbanim we have here, right? It's a bad idea because it's not going to end well. So is Gradle Mutter? The answer is Machloka. Okay. Oh, I see some chats. One second. Okay. Oh, sorry. I missed some of Danny. Sorry, I missed some of your comments. This is the danger of that's the danger of using Zoom, that you can lose track. Okay. Right. So hopefully did I answer everybody's questions? Because if anybody has any questions related to gambling or not that I don't have an answer, please feel free to type it in the chat or ask it out loud.
But what about the bigger picture about holding bingos in shuls? Is that a respectful thing to do, to have gambling nights in a shul? Come on.
So that's a question that each shul should make that call. Whether or not they consider that to be an appropriate, are they worried about the slew of the question of this being a bad activity you want to promote in your community, or do you say that it's just a game night, that's all it is. You happen to be gambling, but it's really just a game night, right? So that's a judgment call that each community would have to make. I am not sticking my head in there.
It's just a fundraiser for the shul.
There's some like conservative shuls that have like bingo nights, and the shul is basically a bingo venue. They hardly any davening there.
Right.
and the shul might, or sometimes it's an external organization. The shul gets like a cut, and it's an external organization.
Right. So that's how concerned are we about leading to bad things in the community? Right. Are we concerned about it being a habit forming dangerous or not? Right. Is it how big is your worry? Like, is in bingo is not necessarily going to lead to the biggest of addictions and wagering tons of money, because it's just not. But on the other hand, other forms of gambling, let's say poker, that has ruined people's livelihoods. Going to casino or going to Vegas is. Was definitely more severe.
On an unrelated question, what would you say about a racehorse trainer?
That's loaded.
So the answer is we discussed that a couple weeks ago. I believe it was mentioned in the year on going to the track. I'm going to get to it. One second. It was... one second. I'm going to open it up and then I'll share that source. So particularly for the horse, if you're just making money off of it, that seemingly should be fine, as pointed out by the Mahari Bruna. Here, let me open that up and then I'll switch, then I'll do a new show here. So the Mari Bruna, so that was said in the, here. Also, let me just do it.
That small.
Share. Here we go. Okay. So let me build it small. Sorry about that. Let me try to make it bigger. Now the formatting just got weird. Okay, basically, so here he says that you're allowed to do it if it's a profession, you're making money. You're basically an entertainer, and that's fine, right? You're not making money on the gambling, right? You're just the horse trainer. It's fine, right? Are you allowed to go to the racetrack? And he says you're allowed to go. Why? if you're planning on going to the business, right? That's why it's allowed. Because you can make good money training racehorses. People like watching, people put a lot of money into it, right? So then it'll be okay. But that's basically the only allowed because of, right? It's only because of professional, okay? Right? So yes, to be a racehorse trainer, you'd be allowed to do. But to be a professional bookie, no.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Sorry for leaving the warning on the screen, but I figure I'd had to just, yeah, for the whole for my conscience. Okay. So any other questions? Okay. So thank you everybody for coming. Hopefully we have learned a little bit about gambling and its potential dangers. And so when we are playing dreidel, hopefully we will be playing dreidel in the spirit of we beat the Greeks while not descending into the dark pit known as gambling.
Thank you very much.